it's relevant that this is the second time I've recorded this piece of audio for the purposes of this project. This project I set out, inspired by Dean Reed, to remember my Peak District, my experience of the Peak District. Dean Reed is mapping the Peak District in audio, and has mentioned a number of other people who are having their own experience of walking landscape. And I feel some element of identification with all of the people who are walking landscape in tents, because I've lived vicariously on landscape throughout my life in different ways. I have, in fact, a small number of times slept outdoors in a tent, pitched a tent on the side of a piece of landscape, and slept there. I've even had a lilo underneath me sleeping in a tent, and I've slept a few times without a lilo. So I wanted to remember my Peak District, because there was a time I never knew where the Peak District was or anything to do with it, so I decided, well, I'll record it. So I decided I would record my memories of the... I would voice my memories of the Peak District without any help from Ordnance Survey maps or guidebooks or diaries or anything, not even a piece of paper with my preliminary, you know, talking notes, order of battle written down. No, I would just do it. But, and this is the relevance, it's slightly been altered. The first recording was altered by the fact that inadvertently I wiped it out. Now, I'm not here to complain about that. No, that's a different issue. But the point is that what I'm going to record from now on has been influenced by the fact that I recorded, you know, over 20 minutes of audio earlier on today, during which my memory was woken up. So this is my second go at the same thing, but the question really in my mind was, how on earth did I ever get to hear about this place called the Peak District? By way of background, I was already familiar with Cornwall, I was already familiar with the Lake District. Familiar now is a very loose word. The Brecon Beacons, Snowdonia, Yorkshire Dales. I think actually that I wasn't familiar with the Norfolk Broads I certainly wasn't familiar, and I'm not really familiar with the Pembrokeshire Coast Path. But those, and we leave Scotland out of it, right? So I'm only talking really about England and Wales. Scotland's a different issue altogether. But I was pretty clueless the day I opened a weekend newspaper magazine and I saw an article about National Parks, England, Wales, and I saw that there was this place which was quite small, but which had the greatest density of visitors of all the national parks, called the Peak District. I hadn't clue what it was. I knew nothing about Derbyshire. I knew about Yorkshire because I was into cricket, you know, and I could have recited my way around Yorkshire in terms of the grounds where first-class cricket was played. And on top of that, I had a perfunctory knowledge and interest in Sheffield United and Sheffield Wanderers. Yes, Sheffield Wanderers. Stan Lee Matthews played for them? I know he played for Stoke. Anyway, that's not the point. The point here is that I want to ramble, if you like, through my experience. So let's just say that we were living in London, in Hackney, and we had a camper van, kind of orange camper van, VW camper van. And please make no assumptions about how wonderful a VW camper van must always be. That's another story, the camper van stories. The main thing is that we left London, and I think it was two children, but it may have been one. Not totally sure if it was before or after 1987. I have a strong feeling that one child was on my back in a carry, because we made our way to the bottom of, well, into the Peak District, but to a particular place, which was the only reference point that I had in the Peak District, and it was the bottom of the Pennine Way. Now, the Pennine Way is a spinal walkway. It you start there, and in fact, you could start at the other end, but if we start down the, around the middle of your back starts the spine, and well, not the middle of your back, the spine starts low down on the back, but about the middle of your body starts a spine. And similarly, the Pennine Way starts about midway up England, and you then walk up to Northumbria, where lots of people are going to be walking on an audioboo soon. Another story. But you walk your way up there. So the reference point in this area, which was completely, you know, clueless to me and us, was my first wife was a Scottish person in terms of disposition and orientation, and she was very familiar with Scotland, but we neither of us knew the Peak District. And we went into it, and clueless. I don't know whether we went to enter the Peak District from Sheffield, where they play snooker, or whether we went at it from the south, really. And the main thing, only really point, is that there was this magnificent little village called Edel. Now, I'm a complete sucker for English churches and English churchyards and burial grounds and yew trees and... We are talking, by the way, about a landscape which includes plague villages. We'll come on to that on another day, and for all I know, it's been adequately covered on audioboo. Certainly it's been covered in films. But the key point is that the churchyard in Edel is a great reference point. So what you do is you park what we did is we parked our camper van in the campsite. And I don't think we did anything except park up, get a place. Now, this is not a fancy duty campsite. This is a place where I'm quite sure we didn't connect our little camper van. It was one of the classic old ones, you know. We didn't connect that to a power source or anything like that. We just kept, we just parked up, knew that there was water nearby for drinking. We had a loo in our own camper van, and there probably was a loo there, but there may not have been a loo in that field in Edel. But basically, we just set out to walk up. Now, you don't go up all that far, but you know the experience of walking up. You don't have to go up all that far before your perspective changes, your point of view changes, and you have the sensation that you've actually done an incredible journey to get to this different vantage point. And one of my great joys of being out in the country and climbing upwards is that, you know, you look back after a short time and, you know, you don't have to go up that high, and you look down and you think you've done a lot, and sometimes you even think you've done enough, or at least I did. But you go up in Edel, up a slope, and the slope was, you know, on a landscape which was well-trodden, so well-trodden that probably the owners of the piece of property we were walking on, which almost certainly was the National Trust, were in the process of putting a particular part of the landscape, setting it aside for people to walk on. And that involved things like helicopters lifting boulders. And I mean, the extraordinary work of the National Trust in the countryside is something I have never waxed on about. I'd have to declare a vested interest that I was once an employee. But the key point about it is that the walkway up in Edel was not a straight line. I'm quite sure that there must have been a waving pathway going upwards, and I'm quite sure that it is a Herculean job, very slow and everything like that, to actually put something on a landscape which is not perceived by everybody as being intrusive and horrid. And the most intrusive thing you can put on a wonderful piece of landscape is a straight road. The best thing you can put is something that mimics the action of animals making their way, weaving along, or something that mimics the shape of a river. In other words, it's a meandering pathway. But anyway, I digress into, you know, what the National Trust were doing on the top of, at the beginning of, well, I'm going to say Edale is the beginning of the Pennine Way. I'm wrong, of course, but those of you who live north, up north, who live in the north of England, would see Edale as the end of the Pennine Way. So it really, you know, is your money, you decide, you know, which way you're going to walk it. But there is actually nothing more I remember vividly seeing people coming down the hill at me as I went up onto the flat bit, or relatively flat bit, of the start of the Pennine Way. Seeing people striding down the last bit, because at the start of the Pennine Way, or at the end of the Pennine Way, is a place where you register the fact that you walked it, you've done it, you get your certificate, you say where you began, you as a starting date, you might hand in a book. It's ever so like the Santiago de Compostela, where you can begin anywhere in the, practically anywhere in Europe, and you bring your little book with you, and you finally get to Santiago in north, western Spain. And you, I don't know exactly where you get your book signed, but it may be in the cathedral in Santiago. But whatever it is, you get your final certificate of achievement. And the same, you know, you can imagine the energy that is still remains in tired legs and wrecked bodies. But given that they're all approaching the end of their marathon, their joyous marathon. I mean, I have so many times dreamt of walking the Pennine Way, you know, and I'll probably go to my grave imagining what it would have been like to walk the Pennine Way. So on we went, scrambling up there. Can't have been that arduous because I did it. We get up onto the top. And you're probably imagining that you get up onto the top means you're on a flat surface. No, you're not. You're on something that shapes gently. I mean, to me, Kilimanjaro comes into mind, that, you know, it just goes on ever so slowly, forever. And forever and forever. And you know these walking experiences where you imagine that in front of you on the ridgeline, on the sight line of the ridgeline, is a you think that that's a point of achievement, you know, and you get there and you just see over to the next bit, or as it goes on and on and on. And I'm not, I mean, all I'm saying is that I'm recalling the experience of thinking, wow, up there lies history. Well, up there lay, on the top of Edale, on the bottom and at the bottom of the Pennine Way, I'm going to say that because I lived on the south in London. Up there lay history, and up there lay struggle, and up there lay conflict. And I'm sure Dean Rees has described this more vividly than I will ever do. And the most vivid thing is to read the first-hand descriptions of what happened in that fateful day, when there was a mass trespass, and the owners of the private property, as it was, and their agents had their lifestyle swept away by mass trespass. I mean, you can hear it in my voice, the celebration of the joys of mass trespass. You know, civil disobedience, you know, wonderful. Winning people the right to walk on the land. Now, look, let's not get into the arguments about the rights of private property and so on and so forth. But the key thing for me was that ahead of me lay a walk that went on and on and on, and I had the right to walk it, and others had the right to walk it. And for peaceful enjoyment of that walk, you know, across the landscape, it was a great feeling of power to have that right won for us by other people. And so, anyway, I must move on from honouring those kind of struggles, you know, but they matter to me. So, but up ahead lies danger too. And the danger is that, as you may not appreciate, that it's a dangerous walk, the Pennine Way. It's dangerous because the weather can change and come in on top of you, and fog and mist and seeing nothing can come down top of you. And there are bogs on either side, you know. So up there on what's called, I think, Kinder Scout, is a long, slow walk. It can be in fairly brutal weather, and of course it depends on what time of the year you do it, and sometimes it's wonderfully benign, and some people do it in all weathers, you know, it's done in snow, you know, and let's say there are even people who could navigate it in the densest fog. Now, I never rose to the ability to wield a compass effectively. I mean, I could follow instructions and, you know, perhaps if I was totally calm and sitting in an armchair without any pressure on me, and you told me my life was covered in fog, I might have been able to find whether I should go forwards, right or left or backwards in order to get to a particular place. But no, I'm one of these walkers who admires, well, one of these walkers who admires really long distance walkers who can navigate. And, you know, these people who do the Pennine Way, especially, you know, unless they're very, very careful, ought to be able to wield a compass. And they certainly should carry clothing, because it can get really cold very, very quickly up there. I know that personal experience. That's another story in another place. But I knew nothing in those days. We went up there. We looked back over the Hope Valley. Now, the looking back is a much... Well, you can't judge views, can you? But it is a wonderful view of a long valley that stretches. You're kind of down at one end of it. So right up the other end is a place called Hathersage, which is part of my Lake Mines Peak District. We'll come back to another time. But you've got this wonderful Hope Valley. And it's only a bit of the Peak District, I have to say. And the part of the Peak District I know best is the Hope Valley part. But there in Edel, up that to the top there, looking back down. You see, this is near places where rugby league is played. Castleton, and places like that, which are famous in rugby league. Forgive me if you know nothing about that game. It's not the same as rugby union. At all. And, you know, but the point about it is, except for the shape of the ball, but the key thing is really that I remember vividly looking back down there. And for, I believe that, you know, on the other side of the valley, of the Hope Valley, there were probably hot air balloons coming over the top. I do now remember hot air balloons coming over the top. And there's nothing more wonderful than hot air balloons coming into sight, I think, because they're so wonderfully colourful, etc., and all that. So the Peak District for me began with that connection with the Pennine Way. It began with the church. It began with family walking up onto it. It began with the acceptance that, look, we can't go any further anyway. Up there is for serious people to walk. But let's go back down into the campsite. And that campsite in Edel became one of my favourite spots of all in England. Now, it is just its location on both sides, surrounded by hills. If I remember rightly, on the south side, there's some beautiful looking shape to the hillside. And then there's the valley and a classical English village, Edel. And the point about English villages are that they're stone. In Ireland, a lot of the villages got washed away by the weather. They weren't, the houses weren't built of anything, the people weren't rich enough to cut stone and build houses out of stone. They built them out of clay and wattles. Basically, they all got knocked down. The roofs, you know, that's why the Irish countryside doesn't have the same rich... archaeology still surviving. But so that's the beginning of it. That's the beginning of my lake, my Peak District. After that came the rest of the story, and that's when other people came into view, real people with whom I worked and real places where I worked. Because I've worked in the Peak District. I've, you know, drink in the Peak District. I can still name a pub or two in the Peak District. But at the time I knew nothing. I couldn't. It was probably a long weekend or something like that. We may have stayed two nights in that campsite. I remember nothing of what we had to eat. I don't remember a pub we went to in the evening. The children were too young. We probably didn't. You know, we weren't the world's greatest outdoor people. I'd certainly tell you we didn't build our own fire. We probably drove to some place to get food, which was probably not that memorable anyway. But in terms of landscape, it was fantastic. Anyway, that's the end of part one of my memory.